Hello and welcome to South Asia Chat, a podcast series brought to you by the Institute of South Asian Studies at the National University of Singapore. I'm Devyani Chaturvedi, Research Analyst at ISAS, and I will be your host for today's episode. 2023 will go down as one of the most action-packed years for India, as it assumes the presidency of not one but two intergovernmental forums: the G20, a group of 20 economies, and the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, also known as the SCO. Both the presidencies would require India to do heavy lifting on significant geopolitical issues, such as the Ukraine-Russia conflict, the US-China competition, post-conflict stabilization in Afghanistan, and severe energy and food security crises. However, the true challenge for India would be to bring all stakeholders on one table. To further deconstruct India's foreign policy amidst its G20 and SCO presidency, joining me today is Dr. Happerman Jacob, Visiting Senior Research Fellow at ISAS and Associate Professor at the Diplomacy and Disarmament Center at the Jawaharlal Nehru University, India. He is also the Founder and Honorary Director of the Council for Strategic and Defense Research, CSDR, in India. Dr. Jacob is the author of Line on Fire, Ceasefire Violations, and is a regular columnist at The Hindu. Welcome, Dr. Jacob.
Thank you so much, Devyani, for having me on this podcast.
So let's dive deep into it now. My first question to you would be, India's leadership in the West-led forum of G20 and China-Russia-led SCO brings to light the deep crevices of the global order. What do you make of these rather paradoxical precedencies?
Thank you, Devyani, for that very interesting question. I think India's leadership in the, as you put it, the West-led G20 and the China-Russia-led SCO may look paradoxical to the outside world, but sitting in Delhi, I don't think it looks paradoxical to India. It definitely does not. Consider the following. For New Delhi, it is rightly placed geopolitically, economically, and from a global balance of power perspective to not only be part of these two forums, but also be in a leadership role in some ways. You know, India is the world's fifth largest economy, and it has every right to be in G20. In fact, it is an ideal candidate for an expanded G7, I would say. If Italy can be in G7, India certainly can be part of that. Look at India's location. It is right in the middle of global geopolitical crossroads, part of the Indo-Pacific, part of the Asian heartland, a vibrant democracy, a growing economy, and an active participant in various global forums. India has also one of the largest militaries in the world, making it an important player in global geopolitics. So, as a country perched in the middle of many important geopolitical global fault lines, it makes perfect sense for India to preside over both these forums at this point of time. In fact, let me expand the canvas a little more, Devyani. It is also a member of the Quad with the US, Japan, and Australia, part of BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, and RIC, Russia, India, China, etc., etc. All of this actually goes to show that India has a role to play in global governance today. So far from being paradoxical, in my opinion, India is doing what a country of its size, location, and ambition should be doing, taking a lead at a time when global governance is in shambles.
Thank you, Dr. Jacob, for truly positioning India's agenda and interests in the region and beyond. In your opinion, what are certain opportunities and challenges that these two presidencies would bring for India and its foreign policy?
So, as I said, you know, it's high time India plays a role in various global forums. And its presidency of the SCO and G20 comes at a time when India is making an attempt to navigate the various geopolitical contestations in the international system. So as far as opportunities are concerned, as Prime Minister Modi pointed out at the G20 foreign ministers meeting, I think last month, global governance under the UNSC, he didn't say UNSC, global governance has failed, you know, meaning UNSC has failed. So countries that believe in global order, international law, and the like must step up. And institutions like G20, SCO, BRICS are perhaps the vehicles through which certain semblance of global order can come into being at a very difficult time in world politics. So for the foreseeable future, I think global governance might not be characterized by one single institution dominated by one part of the world, and I have UN Security Council in mind here, but several forums that are able to take on board a multiplicity of issues from climate change to poverty. I think the world is too large and diverse for any one country, one region, and one forum to manage it all. It needs, I think, today's international system, today's world needs actor diversity, institutional diversity, and ideational diversity. That is the future of global governance. And in that more democratic system of global governance, I think India has a key role to play. But it is also in some ways, you asked about challenges, it is also in some ways a challenging time for India. As you know, there are pressures on India to fall in line with one side or the other. India is asked to make a choice to be with democracies or non-democracies. But I think making such an either or choice is not possible for a country like India, located where it is, geopolitically, historically, etc. So the challenge, I think, really is in trying to balance the various pressures and yet be able to contribute to global governance positively. I think it's a tightrope walk. It's a very careful balancing act that India has to put on, especially in the year 2023.
I think you rightly mentioned about the diversity of institutions and India's emphasis on it. As you may know, India's G20 agenda actually emphasized on its responsibility towards the Global South and in fact prioritized reform in multilateralism. How do you see this presidency doing that? And what do you think would that mean for institutions such as the UNSC?
You know, I, for one, am very delighted to see this new enthusiasm in New Delhi about the Global South. In fact, if you read Indian foreign policies, the history of it from 1947 onwards, Global South has always been part of the Indian geopolitical consciousness since independence in 1947. India has stood by some of the key core concerns of the Global South, and has often tried to sort of flag these concerns in various global forums. India is part of the Global South and identifies with many of the challenges faced by the South. And yet, I think India's desire to be a global South unionist, if I may put it that way, doesn't exist anymore. I think it has moved on from that trade unionist mentality. It's more constructive in its current Global South claims and articulations, as it were, as we saw in the January 2023 meeting. In fact, January 2023, India convened a Voice of the Global South summit in New Delhi. It is a virtual one. Almost 125 countries of the Global South, consisting countries from South America, Africa, Asia, parts of Oceania, participating in that summit. I think this summit had the logic to sort of retrace India's willingness to use the G20 platform not only as an exclusive grouping concerned with global challenges, but to, you know, shine a light on the challenges faced by developing countries who are not part of the G20, and sort of indicate how their concerns should be an important agenda item in global diplomacy. Now that sort of an approach sounds like a democratic approach to global governance, if you ask me. So the Indian ability to bring together the clubs of these big boys, G7, etc., G20, etc., and sort of bring the concerns of the Global South, which it has identified for a very long time, I think that is a unique ability that many of the other countries do not have. Prime Minister Modi also said in the G20 foreign ministers meeting earlier this year that this group has a responsibility towards those not present in this room. Meaning who? Meaning the Global South in many ways. And then you have the Global South meeting. So I think all of it actually tells you that India has a certain approach to dealing with the issues of Global South, even while it is chairing one of the important forums, exclusive clubs, as it were, in the international system. I think New Delhi, through the Global South Summit, wanted to portray itself as the spokesperson in some ways of the developing world and highlight that the developmental challenges faced by the Global South should concern the developed countries as well. Historically, as I said, India has been one of the strongest voices in the Global South, as we have seen during the non-aligned movement at the G77, where India has taken a leadership role often. India has actually several multilateral arrangements with countries of the Global South. A large number of the Global South concerns, I think, will become part of the G20 summit thanks to India's presidency. Now, having said that, I think it would be a mistake for me not to point out that New Delhi also sees a certain amount of instrumental value in the Global South. Today, it seeks to be part of an expanded democratic global governance system, and in some ways, it believes that the construct of the Global South gives it an instrumental value in terms of speaking for a large part of the world that is often underrepresented in global governance. So in some ways, it is a way to project India's power, figure out the important players among the developing countries, and consolidate India's influence on them while it can, while the presidency is still with the Indian government. So I think in some ways, it is a very smart move on the Indian side to go back to some of those foundational arguments about Global South at a time when India is presiding over a club that mostly consists of the developed and rich countries. Back to you, Devyan.
Thank you, Dr. Jacob. I think that really rounds up India's approach to the Global South when it comes to the G20, and we are so grateful. I'm sure our listeners will also be. I think my next question to you would be about how India, in the Indian presidency, in midst of its own agenda, while struggling with saddling the Ukraine-Russia crisis, the US-China competition and its ripple effects, is going to affect India's success in its presidency. So over to you, Dr. Jacob, what in your view would be a success for the Indian presidency at both the G20 and SCO?
Right. Devyan, I think let me make a larger point here. I think a chaotic international system is not necessarily bad for Indian interests, as it were. Imagine this. If there was no Ukraine war and there was some sort of normalcy between United States/West and Russia, would anyone have the time to come to India for support or political backing, etc.? No, nobody would have cared for India. India would be just another country where there with little geopolitical significance for the global scheme of things. So India's stakes in the international system, or rather India's importance in the international system, has expanded thanks to the Ukraine war in some ways. So the Ukraine war has changed and enhanced India's global prominence, if I may put it differently. So coming at this time, India's presidencies of the SCO and G20 are crucial for India to underline its importance in global governance for global stability and order. In that sense, I think the very fact that India is chairing these two forums is of great significance for India. But I think New Delhi must ensure that G20 forum in particular doesn't become a space for a US/West versus Russia shouting match. I mean, there's every likelihood that it is going to happen that way. You saw many other meetings, the finance ministers meeting, etc., unable to sort of agree to anything thanks to this sort of focus on Ukraine. So for India, a good outcome of G20 would be to persuade the attendees to focus on global governance and related issues, and not just on the Russia-Ukraine war. As for the SCO, I think India must get the SCO leaders to focus on issues that matter to the region, be it energy security, food security, climate change, etc. A lot of people actually ask me often, why is India part of a grouping that is led by China, which is the Shanghai Cooperation Organization? My simple answer to that, Devyani, is often a counter question. Would it suit Indian interests better if India were to renounce its membership of the SCO? Would it make sense for India to be part of a group that indeed is discussing some of the key concerns of the region? I think it makes perfect sense for India to be part of the SCO, even though it is China-led, rather than renounce it. If India renounces its membership, it is going to be a bystander to a major organization in the region that is discussing important issues pertaining to the region and has it on board key countries of the region. So I think this whole argument about if you're part of the G20 and Quad and all of that, you shouldn't be part of SCO, I think that makes absolutely no sense. India is a country that is able to bridge many of these global fault lines and divides, and the international community should treat India that way and look at India that way and potentially even make use of India to bring about that semblance of normalcy to the international system. Back to Devyani.
Thank you so much, Dr. Jacob. I think you largely outlined three outcomes that you would accredit to India's success in both its presidency, and I may just reiterate that once again for our listeners. First would be persuasion towards absentees to take a global governance approach. Second would be bringing states to discuss regional interests. This is especially in the case of the SCO. And third, India using its platform to bridge the gap and fault line or crevices, as we may call them, in the world order. So my last question to you, Dr. Jacob, would be, how do you think these presidencies would actually shape India's foreign policy in the coming years?
I think, you know, the twin presidencies of this kind do not come very often in a country's geopolitical life, as it were, right? So this is an important moment for India. This is a time when India is able to carefully calibrate its interests in the context of the geopolitical contestations in the international system. So I think India's performance in these two forums and its ability to preside over these two forums at a time of geopolitical uncertainty and the failure of global governance, I know I'm repeating that particular phrase, I think Prime Minister Modi got that absolutely right. I think this will be watched very carefully by the international community. I think this is in some ways the arrival of India as a major stakeholder in the international system. India's ability to shepherd these two forums through the vagaries of regional and global geopolitics will also indicate, and I underline that, will also indicate that the country is able to play global leadership roles effectively at a time when the world needs effective leadership. So if the international community is looking for leaders who can navigate the international system through some of the difficult times that we are experiencing today, I think India is one of those candidates. More so, I think these two presidencies will underline India's claim that it has a unique position globally, geopolitically, economically, and normatively, and that it has its own unique voice. So tomorrow, you know, when in India's objective should be that at the end of these two presidencies, those who ask India to fall in line or where do you stand should not ask India where do you stand, should ask India what is your stand on certain things. I think India, it is time, it is an opportunity for India to assert its own unique voice on the global stage. I will leave it at that, Devyani. Back to you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Jacob. I think extremely insightful, this distance that India may travel through these two presidencies from where to stand to what is your stand is going to be quite an interesting journey. And we're all here to see what both the presidencies will hold in the rest of the year. Thank you so much. You were listening to South Asia Chat. To learn more about our work, please visit us at isas.nus.edu.sg. You can also get updates from our social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter. Thank you.